Hi, everyone. Welcome to Second Wind Women. I'm here with Diana Ault. Diane started her career right as the dot-com bubble was bursting. She got her master's degree and landed her first IT consulting job in 2009, which was not that long ago, only to be laid off before the holidays in 2000. So she found another job pretty quickly, but got laid off again 6 months later. So with less experience than her competition, she knew she'd have to be smarter and more strategic to get ahead in tech. For the next 19 years, she did every job you can imagine in IT: developer, tester, business analyst, project manager, product manager, and more. Through all of this, she learned how to build strong relationships, pick the right roles to grow her skills and her value, and solve problems in ways that made her whole team better. Now she uses everything she's learned to help other professionals build their careers while actually enjoying their job and life. In 2014, she started her own coaching business, helping leaders take control of their careers and stop just grinding through every day. Mm-hmm. Her approach is straightforward. She combines what you want with a practical plan based on what's happening in your industry. Her goal is to make you become even more valuable, transform how you work, and set yourself up for success, however you define it. Whether that's rapid growth, better work-life balance, or taking your career in a completely new direction. So welcome.
Thanks. I love that you like trotted over to my about page on my website. It's so weird how we can be in business for a long time and we don't read our own stuff on our website. So I was like, oh, that was really great copy. With that person sounds impressive.
Oh, wait, that's me.
Wait, yeah, that's me. I had a copywriter help with that. And she.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, this is an adapted version. But yeah. Huh? It was an adapted version, but yeah,
You did a lovely job with it. So
thank you.
And thanks for doing that.
Well, of course. So can you tell, I'm a little curious how you were able to pivot into all these kind of very different roles between being like a tester, a developer, a project manager, a product manager, and what time span all of that was within.
So, oh gosh, what a great question. So the answer for anybody, like I can talk time span in a minute, but the real answer is finding a thread between the things that you like to do. And that's actually really important when I'm working with clients, especially clients that are very deeply into the tech world, which most of mine are, because a lot of the most popular job titles now like did not even exist 8 years ago.
Remember when prompt engineer was going to be the next big job?
Right. And now like your middle schooler can prompt better than half the people in corporate. But basically my thread has always been that I'm at the nexus of where technology meets people and process. And I've said my whole career, I'm not really technical, but I'm analytical. And I'm really good at seeing systems. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, like people like my salty self, I'm able to form relationships with people. My very first job out of college that I had for, a couple of years, I was in this lane, was to be a consultant. I was basically a technology consultant straight out of getting my master's degree.
Really?
So, wow. Yeah. And in like 1990 to 2001, which was when I was in that lane and got laid off twice, it was mostly things like designing like websites, custom web systems. And it was also the early stage of ERP and CRM programs like Salesforce or Siebel was the one back in the day. And SAP, like all those kinds of big systems large companies use. So for me, like I had to take a coding class in college. Like I had to be trained on it in my first job. It was never my first love, but I learned how to do it well enough to eat at a couple of times when I needed to be doing that type of work. I don't think I would have made a very good developer long term because I just didn't care enough. But what I did care about was understanding what people needed out of their systems and their processes and drawing that out of people and then helping figure out how to make it happen. So I always sat in the middle, and every single one of the roles that you talked about was that. When I was a tester, I had to understand how the system was put together, what the user's requirements actually were, like how the stuff was actually working once you got your hands on it. So that was in the middle. Project management's in the middle because you have to do all that plus manage like the status of the projects and is it going well? Right. Do you have enough people? In product management, it was about understanding what the market needed the product to do, what problems they needed to solve. And then again, working with the technology side to make it happen. So that being in the middle and understanding what people needed and how to like align with a group of people to make it happen has been the common thread for years. And I would argue it's
user advocate kind of almost regardless yeah, like, of who the user
it's
is.
Like it's user advocate and it's basing it on what people that are going to touch the system actually need instead of what someone says that they should need, which yeah. is really like when software development first started becoming a big thing, like no one was talking to the users. IT That's was just making crap and giving it to people. And mm-hmm. they were like, what is this nonsense? So
I've seen a lot of that. I've yeah. seen a lot of that.
And I'd argue that that's what I do as a coach, too. It's just a different dimension. I'm not working on what is this product the company is going to sell to thousands of customers anymore. I'm working on what do you want your life to be? What is it that you need? Okay, what's reality? You want your life to look like this. You have these skills and experience. You want to move in this direction. And the market says you need to do X in order to make that happen and to be the best candidate. So, or working with people on promotion. My own podcast is called Work Should Feel Good. And I don't think that transcends like 2 versus 1099 versus having your own business.
Right, right. Wow. Well, speaking of like transitions in life, you've gone through quite a bit even recently, right?
Yeah.
It looks like you personally, you did a little bit of starting over.
I feel like that's all we do in life, right? If we're really thinking about it.
You've seen that graphic and it's like how you think success should look and it's like a little arrow and how yeah. it actually looks and it goes.
It's like squirrelies and curly Qs and falling off the cliff, which honestly, how boring would it be if we just linearly progressed all the way through life? There's no fun in that.
I don't know. It could be fun.
I think sometimes we'd rather be on the kiddie coaster for a little while instead of on that really weird, scary one that you're not sure that they inspected properly before the amusement park opened that morning. But I've had a couple of reinventions. The most recent one is not necessary. It's very internal focus. So I had a brain tumor, a pituitary tumor, benign, like I'm fine, but it kind of wreaked havoc on my health for many years. I found out about it in 2021 and it was already pretty big and causing problems. And my endocrinologist at the time was like, you probably have had that for like a decade solid. So I just let it ride and treated it with medicine for a long time. And that helped some, but then it started messing with my vision. So about a year before I had surgery, I was like, why are things fuzzy? And it's because the type of tumor I had can smash on the optic nerve and mess with your peripheral vision.
That's
and so
right inside of everything, right?
Yeah. Like I had an inch and a half long tumor. It was like ovalish. There is not room for an inch and a half of anything behind your eyes.
Little
and,
river
like,
rock.
In your brain. Like, I don't,
yeah,
it's a good thing that stuff is squishy because it makes room for it. But yeah, so that was the situation that I had. And of course, it messes with all your hormones and stuff whenever it's sitting on top of your pituitary. So I had to have that out. I had surgery on August 1st, which was quite a project for a few reasons. Number one, it's just there were two surgeons involved from two different medical systems, and just organizing all of that is a mess. But also, I own my own business. It's a services-based business, one-on-one. I'm the only coach. I'm a solopreneur with some virtual assistants and people like helping me with different stuff. But I basically had to power down my business. And now I'm in the process of powering it back up. And boy, that's hard. Because if you're in a regular job and you have to go take 2 or 3 months of medical leave, you hand your stuff in, your boss goes and finds someone to work on your projects or puts them on hold. You show back up when you're ready to be back at work and you're just picking up what happened in the last 3 months. Let's go. In my business, on average, I work with job search clients in particular are the most sensitive. I have other clients on retainer for like, let's plan a career pivot or getting promoted or whatever. But when people are in a job search program, job searches take on average 8 months now, and they're in a, you know, sometimes in a 3 month, 6 month or longer program with me, I have to figure out what to do with those people. And I have to, you know, Can you imagine that? I got laid off. I'm in a job search. Oh, by the way, my coach has to disappear. So I had to give a lot of lead time to people, which I fortunately had. At least it wasn't an emergency surgery.
Yeah.
But I had to give lead time to people. I had to stop taking clients at a certain point because it would have just not been ethical.
Right.
To start people so new. I had to find other coaches that were willing to be points of contact. Mm-hmm. And then when I started back on October 1st, I have no sales pipeline.
You're starting off.
So I have a reputation and a website and I scheduled content ahead. And it's not like I disappeared from the face of the earth, but it's a pretty heavy lift to do that. So
I'm kidding, on top of your recovery and on top of like just the stress of anytime you have surgery where you're just like, okay, here I am, cut into me. That's right. A very intense moment, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when it's literal brain surgery. Yeah. So they did go up through my nose. Like my recovery was actually pretty easy. My surgeon said, take off from work completely for 8 weeks because you're actually going to feel pretty good in week three. And I don't want you to work, which I totally violated. But I spent 2 weeks not working. And then I didn't have any structure to my day. So I didn't take any client meetings until October. Mm-hmm. But I was like, at least I can empty the inbox or things like that. So I just, for the next several weeks, about 2 hours a day, usually like 10 o'clock to noon, I would go sit at my desk so that I had some anchor to my day and do whatever struck me. And if I felt like leaving it after 15 minutes, it was fine. So it was all completely optional. And that's kind of how I came back. So
sounds like a really scary moment. I mean, not only... as far as your physical health, but just like as far as your business's health, right? I mean, you knew you would come back, but it's still such a, my cousin just was dealing with cancer and she's a therapist, similar thing. God. She's like, I'm going to be going through chemo for, I don't know how long. Sorry, all my patients, I'm going to have to pass them off. And then once I start up again, I'm starting like a brand new.
Yeah. There is a couple cool things about it though.
Okay.
So number one, I did get really good after the surgery when I knew it was fine. So the time leading up to the surgery, I can touch on that in a minute. But after the surgery was done, which was August 1st at Good Old Research Hospital here in the Kansas City area, we knew it went pretty well almost immediately. I was in the hospital for like 3 days. I had vision improvement immediately. So I'm still kind of stoned when they bring me out of anesthesia and I'm pumped full of steroids, which reduces swelling and I could immediately see better. And that kind of went away a little bit as they said, no, you're not going to be on hydrocortisone forever. We need to get you off of that. But then like 2 weeks later, it was better. So I didn't realize how bad that had gotten, but I was tired and crabby. Right. I didn't have that much pain. Honestly, I pulled my back a week and a half before surgery and that was like 10 out of 10. And my surgery was like 3 out of 10. So I got very lucky on the recovery front. I was just tired and there I would hit a wall where I'm like, I can't think anymore. So I was like, okay, yeah, that surgeon of mine was right to tell me not to try to do cognitively intense stuff. But I've done pretty well coming back, especially since I know that I have more energy. I still sometimes deal with fatigue. I'm getting used to a full schedule.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that it does is it leaves room for stuff. Like when I put clients on pause or I passed them off and I didn't have a pipeline, well, let's rebuild a everybody has clients that are fountains and clients that are drains. And let's spend some time identifying the difference between the two. Because if a client is a drain, it's usually a drain for both people. So I don't feel energy working with them because something is off. Either my approaches don't work as well for them or they're just not doing the work or whatever that is. But they probably feel just as uncomfortable with the situation. So I spent time even earlier in the year thinking about what are the attributes of the people who I do the best work with that I enjoy the most, that I feel like we have the best results. And that way I can look at, do I have the right product offerings for them? So I decided that Q4, any money I made was gravy. So I've already made almost no money for 3 months because I was supposed to have surgery on July 1st. So I'd already shut everything down. And then my surgeon's dad died. So I had to reschedule a month later. I just took it off. got my podcast that was only video onto audio platforms. But then I basically was able to think about, well, what are the people that I don't serve as well anymore? And what I found is that I do well with job search people that treat job search coaching as an investment. If they look at it and immediately think that costs a lot, then a lot of times they're not for me because I'm helping, like, for most people, you're gambling that I'll help you get a job a week to 2 weeks earlier if you pay for one of my top programs. Like, if you can't take a gamble on that with someone that's got a decade of experience, you probably need to take a different approach. And I need to get those people to where I can refer them to something else or whatever. I need the people that are like, I'm an executive, you know, I'm planning to leave this job or I already got laid off. I value your expertise. I'm willing to work. I know that this is a risk, but I view it as an investment. Those people are the ones that I enjoy working with and that do the best. But I also like working with people that are doing career development. So if you're trying to grow as a leader because you just got promoted and you want to do a great job or you want to chart a path for the next couple of years or things like that, I discovered that the people that were in that bucket were more fun to serve for me because that's the 90% that our career actually is. So kind of work on some of the gnarly stuff day to day. And it's a little bit more relational than let's figure out where you're going to apply. This is your new resume, blah, blah, blah. So now, since I didn't just go balls to the wall for that 3 months trying to, you know, get the new clients and serve the ones I have and everything, I could pause and think, what do I want to walk into 2026 with? And I decided that's more clarity on the value that I bring to people that are in the other 90% of their career where they're not looking for a job. So, yeah.
So you had some time to coach yourself.
Yeah. So I've had time. Yeah, I coach myself a lot. And I'm in the process. What I did at the very beginning of October when I first came back is I made a business plan for 2026. So this is how much money I want to make. And this is how I want the money to come about, you know, this much for job search and this much for executive coaching and this much for this other thing. And then I decided to spend Q4 focusing on what do I need to do to make it possible for that to happen starting in January. So I don't know that I would have been able to do that or been in the headspace to do it, both from a time perspective, but also from a headspace perspective, because it's really hard to not accept a cool new client. It's hard to say, no, I'm full.
Believe me, I know. Yeah.
It's really hard to say, no, I'm full when the reason you're saying you're full isn't other clients. It is because you're trying to serve your own business and your own life.
Yeah. I think that's one of the biggest challenges that entrepreneurs, especially solopreneurs, have, right? Is to take the space for themselves instead of like grinding, serving, planning, right? To just like step back and be like, do some evaluating. And I think that's a huge value of hiring a coach because it's so hard to do that for yourself.
Yeah. I say that like there's a few businesses that I'm in as a coach. And like, so you have Second Wind Woman and you have your own business. And you and I talked a long time ago to decide I was going to be on this podcast. And then I promptly forgot what your business was about. So
yeah.
Who are you helping?
My business is Spees Digital and I work with small entrepreneurs, women who are moving into their own creative business out of like either a corporate environment or being a mom or working in a W-2 and they really want to be an entrepreneur. That's really who I'm working with.
We just became best friends.
Yeah.
Because I have been working with a lot of people that want to capture their knowledge. So some of the people that I work with are actually wanting to start a side hustle as a hedge or they're trying to get out of corporate. So we should definitely nerd out more about that because I'm good at marketing, but not execution. Mm-hmm. Like I don't do digital execution. I can help with strategy at a high level and then send somebody like, go find a real marketer, not somebody on Fiverr, like go find a real marketer to help you with this. So
don't get me started.
So you and I understand each other very well in that respect. But it's hard to say no to clients that are bad for you, but I got to tell you as a business owner, it feels kind of similar to something I tell job seekers too. Boldest, confidence-giving move, if you let it be, is to say no to stuff that's bad for you.
Yeah.
So saying no to a client that is going to be a pain in the ass or that you don't think that you can serve well as another client for whatever reason that is, it's great. Opting out of a hiring process where you go, I know I don't want this, is also empowering. So big fan of both of those.
I wanted to just take a minute to tell you about a new business I'm working on. It's called Red Nose Corporate, and it's a business that creates workshops to help bring cohesion and better communication in corporate teams using techniques from improv and Red Nose Clown. Not as silly as it sounds, a little bit silly. You'll be able to find it at rednosecorporate.com.
Yeah, I love what you're saying. And so often I hear it explained in like these magical terms, which I think really does it a disservice, you know, where like if you open up the space for something you want by denying something you do. I mean, it's really true, but it's not like a magical process. It's just it's a matter of you curating what you'll accept into your reality, right?
I think curation is the perfect analogy. And I think you and I both as podcast hosts, I don't know, how long have you had your show?
Not
this
long.
This is your new show, right?
Years ago. Years.
Yeah, this is your new show. I'm remembering our conversation from a couple months ago now. So you've got this as your new show. My show is less than a year old. So we're both baby podcasters, at least in our first thing. But the most important thing I do is curate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The rest of it, I don't need, I mean, I happen to have a fancy mic because I got tired of the MacBook Air, whatever nonsense.
Yeah.
But I have a good mic, I have a good camera, but I also did 12 episodes before I bought either of those things because I wanted to make sure that I liked it. But my most important job is curating the conversation, hands down. And in our lives, I think we have to curate what we're going to have around us. I do think, you know, there's ways to state the bit about you have to make room for stuff. So, but if my closet is full and I want to buy some new jeans, like the old jeans that are two sizes too small and look like crap anyway, got to go.
Yeah.
So I can put the cute new jeans in there.
That's a great analogy, but a lot of people don't let them go. They put them in a box. They put them on the top.
Put them in a box and then they take them to the storage, the self-storage.
And then they pay for storage for years and years.
Size 8 when they wear size 14. Into a box that goes into the climate controlled self-storage that they're paying a couple hundred bucks a month for.
Right.
And then they wonder why they cannot afford the things that they want.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't go on a vacation because, well, a year of your self-storage would have paid for your damn vacation.
Oh my gosh. So what prompted you to actually make the move and leave corporate? Was it a layoff or was it?
It was not. It was a values alignment thing. So story time. So I left corporate in 2019, middle of 2019. I can't believe it's over 6 years. I had started coaching before that. And I had also done like some technology training and consulting and workshops. I just did the thing where you have an LLC and you just kind of do stuff, right? Scott, like some of your clients probably do as well. So I basically did stuff on the side. I gained competency. I helped a lot of people. But at the same time, I was growing a technology career. And I was working at an ed tech company as a product manager for a couple of years before I left, where I was performing at a level 1 to 2 levels higher than the HR title. I had a massive scope of responsibility. And I had been promised like, hey, in January of 2019, this is the promotion that we're going to be doing, blah, blah, blah. And then there was a leadership change with my director who supported this, but the CPO did not like the people on my director's team because we did more technical stuff and he like did not understand our products as well as he understood other products.
Mm-hmm.
He also was conflict averse. And I'm the person that will say the thing. I say the quiet part out loud a lot. And then other people are DMing like, thank you for saying that. But essentially, me and another woman that had been told that we're in the same situation were told, sorry, we're not doing that right after the first of the year. Also right after our director had left the group and couldn't really advocate anymore. And then a couple months later, they said, well, yeah, we have decided to hire at that level, but we're hiring one only. And because that's all we need. And we're posting externally. If you want to apply, you can apply, which is a giant F you.
Yeah.
If I've ever heard one.
Yeah.
So I just looked at the new director and I said, thank you for letting me know this. I'll let you know what I'm going to do. And I went home and thought about it and consulted a couple of people. And I decided, including my mom, who has never understood anything about any work I do, but she understands me. Mm-hmm. And she's always had like a stable career with a pension. She worked for decades for the same place, that kind of thing. And I told her, I think I'm going to make this leap. And I was scared to tell her because I knew she'd worry. And she's like, you can't take it with you. If they would have promoted you, you would have just stayed there being miserable for 3 more years because you would have felt like you own them. So I decided to leave. And so 5-6 days after they pulled that stunt on me and my colleague, I gave my resignation and I told them that they were insane if they didn't give the one spot to the other colleague, which they did. And they screwed her over on compensation and refused to pay her what she should have been paid at that level. So then she left a little while later.
Yeah.
So,
once they start doing squirrely shit like that, like how could you trust them? Anyway, at that point, even if they had said you can apply for it and we'll probably hire you. Right. Then already
we are required by our policy to post it externally. And that actually had been true. We all would have been like, totally get it. Completely fine.
Yeah.
But not only was that not company policy, they didn't even try to disguise the fact that they really found both of us to be irritating. Because she was the other person that said the quiet thing out loud.
It doesn't work.
Really cool thing they did is they
work in corporate.
What'd you say?
I said I found that didn't work very well in corporate for me either. But what were you gonna say?
You know when it works is when you're a consultant.
Yeah.
I can go in and speak truth as a consultant because people will either hear it and do the thing and it works and it's great and you look like a genius for hiring the consultant, or they can do it and it doesn't work, or they don't take your advice because they think it's dumb and then they can blame it on you. And I already have cashed the check. So
yeah, great.
There's no win. Something I figured out in my career is that I'm actually the most useful in an organization, or if the company's really big, like within the department or business unit, I'm the most useful in the first 2 years because I'm a perspective granter. So when I get too close to the situation and start to lose my independence of thought, I'm not as effective. So when I was in the longest place I ever worked was almost 5 years. And I had 4 roles in that 5 years. And every single time I got recruited. So I was a software engineer. And I told my boss at that, this was all at Cerner. I told my boss, I don't think I want to be coding. If I'm coding in 2 years, it's a problem, is what I told him. A year and a half later, they made me a BA. And then another year and a half or so later, I got recruited to lead a software testing team, which was my first people management job. And then I got recruited out of IT to go work in sales ops as like a business process architect person, which now we would actually call an internal product manager. So,
right.
And I had competency, you know, there was familiar domain, but I was like, okay, let's do something else with some different people. That'll be cool. I mean,
that's great. But you make a really good point about a consultant, because you really do need an outside eye, because there are complexities to relationships when you're entrenched in a group, right? And the outside eye can see things totally objectively, if that even exactly exists, but in a more objective way.
I don't even know if objectivity is the right way to think about it. I think a lot of times it's just different. It's just thinking differently. It's getting you out of your weeds. So let me tell you a couple of examples. Probably my favorite example was more of a coaching scenario. So I have a longtime client, and this was fairly early on. This guy is an executive coaching client I've had for a few years. He came to me because he worked for a company where he was the heir apparent for the business unit GM that was going to be retiring. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to basically prepare himself for that because he was going to be leading 25 people and like all this different stuff. And he said, I want you to help me. And somewhere along the line, like when he was getting really close to within a few months of, okay, the old guy is leaving, like you're really going to be taking over. You're really already getting to know the people because everyone knows this is happening. He seemed kind of distressed about some things. And I just said to him, what do you think your job is going to be as the GM? And he starts saying, well, I've got to maintain customer satisfaction and this profitability and that, you know, sales target and all this kind of stuff. And I just said, what if that's not actually your job? And he looked at me like I had two heads. And then I he said, what would my job be? And I said, your job is to create the conditions where the people working for you can ensure client satisfaction and deliver and create the profitability and the revenue and all of that stuff. And he's a talker. If you think I'm a talker, this guy is definitely a talker.
I'm glad you're a talker.
It completely changed everything about how he thought about the promotion, everything about how he thought about leadership. It changed how hiring, his mindset around hiring, like all these different things. And we're like 2 years plus after that conversation. And that's been a guiding principle for him the whole time.
I mean, that's, yeah, changing your mind about, it sounds like he was just heaping, you know, responsibility upon responsibility without looking at the role. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's different ways to think about it, but there's also management and then there's leading. And he wanted to lead more.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to be like the prior guy, could be a little bit more of a micromanager sometimes, had a very different style. Like, nothing wrong with the guy who worked there for 15 years and did good work. But my client wanted to be different and be more relational with people and tap into potential that maybe had been unseen while serving all of the business unit needs. And you have to think differently to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. You said there was another example as well.
Another example was a company. So it's actually a small wealth management company. I've actually been a client of this place, but the owner of it had a pretty massive long-term plan, but a lot of work to do to get there. And I helped him think differently about things like hiring for his team, because he had some growth that he had. He had a couple of people that left like during the period of time that I was working with him. And some of the things that they were doing were not necessarily best practices for hiring, because his team was so small, he didn't have to do it. There's no HR department in a 6-person company.
No, of course.
So I had to help him think differently about how you're hiring. What kind of people are you hiring? You used to hire generals and now you're hiring specialists. Mm-hmm. How are you going to make sure that the specialists can do what they can do? So there was mindset shifts about that. And also I partnered with him to create a process where anything with wealth management or financial advising is very operational in nature. You have a flow. You have regulatory requirements that if someone says, I want to buy X stock, you have to make it happen within a certain period of time or you could lose your license. So the stakes for the operation are very high. But he had this long-term plan to bring in another financial advisor and to grow his business and to like add on an accounting firm and like all these things that he had designs on in the future. And so he had to do projects. He had to figure out, how do I use my staff to get some projects done that will set me up to be able to grow this business in the way that I want to grow it. And I helped him figure out a way to set quarterly projects that would move the business forward that could be done by his team along the way without interrupting operations. And so that was good. He was very on board with that. And then I said, okay, now we need to look at your bonus program and your performance evaluations. Mm-hmm. Because you can't just say you're doing a good job in that.
You're doing extra work. Great.
Well, I would argue it's not extra work. You know, Okay. Everybody finds, nobody was like working overtime to make that happen. Or, you know, they just figured out how to fit it in instead of, it's like figuring out how to take, my friend Leslie calls it time confetti. When you have little bits of time in your week or in your day that you could move something forward, but you don't have a plan for what that would be. So basically we figured out like, how can we leverage time confetti, or how can we teach people time blocking so you can get your operational stuff done, but work on big chunks of work? All those kinds of things are things that his team learned along the way. But I said, okay, well, if you're saying this is critical to the business and you're saying that you need your team to do it, let's incent them. And he already had bonus programs tied to other stuff that was operational. I'm like, well, your focus now is making sure also that the projects are getting done so that you can meet this bigger vision. Why not retool your bonus program so that there's a combination of the operational targets being hit and project targets being hit? So that kind of stuff. And I mean, he might've got there. He's a really smart guy.
Right.
But we made that happen faster.
Fantastic. So what would you say is like the most common issue that you're dealing with, not with job seekers, because that's pretty obvious what their common issue is, but, you know, in situations like that, what do you think is the most common, like, overarching issue that you're dealing with?
So it's really a lack of clarity. Mm. And in many cases, it comes about for a couple of different reasons, but a lack of clarity, even with job seekers, to be very honest, is the top thing that people are battling with. They don't know what they want to do, or sometimes they know, but they don't know how to say it. And in the case of the people that gravitate towards me, they're typically pretty smart, pretty analytical. They're coming, you know, a wealth manager is dealing with finance stuff and whatnot. A lot of my people that are in tech or marketing are dealing a lot with data systems, et cetera. They're freaking smart, educated people, either with college educations or the School of Hard Knocks. And it's all swimming around. They have a lot of tabs open. Mm-hmm. And so what I do with people is try to help them pick away at the tabs and close some of them so they can say, what do I want to do next? And then there's another aspect that's probably number two, but a close number two. And that is giving them permission. These people need a permission slip. And yeah. I have been known to send people a permission slip in the mail. Here's your permission slip to start working on a new job search. Don't stop worrying about if you're loyal or not. They're not loyal to you. I did a talk about that exact same thing. I had everybody in the room write themselves a permission slip or get their neighbor to write them a permission slip.
Coming from Catholic school, that's amazing.
I didn't go to Catholic school, but I grew up in a very Catholic town and a lot of my friends did. So I very much know about that.
Yeah, they were all about the forms.
More and more, like my focus now is to get people to write themselves the permission slip, because if they don't, they won't do it. And then the third thing that goes along with all of it is belief, because what good is clarity and permission to do the thing if you don't actually believe that it can be done?
Right. Yeah.
So, no point. You know, there's all kinds of different ways I work with people on that. Sometimes it's a worksheet, like, here is how to answer, tell me about yourself in a job interview, or here is how to think about prioritizing your next round of quarterly projects or whatever. I'm very good at creating simple frameworks and things that people can use along the way. But there's a lot to it. It sounds like three simple things. It is not three simple.
That's the thing. Simple things, when you get into implementation, they're very complex. But if you start off trying to tell people about complex things, people can't grab onto it. You know, strategy of communication, I think.
I try to reduce complexity where I can, and got an engineering degree. So I have a bachelor's degree in chemistry and a master's degree in engineering management. And in my master's degree, most of the courses that I took were either in management of technology, which is like business side stuff, project management stuff. I took like a marketing class and some things like that, just that kind of thing. And then I took a lot of classes in quality engineering. This was the late 90s. And like a lot of my compadres from college were going to work at manufacturing facilities. So they were going to work at Xerox and at Caterpillar and at GM and whatnot. And so especially people in this program were trying to figure out total quality management and lean and all the Japanese Toyota stuff and whatnot. But for me, the whole quality engineering thing was about continuous improvement. That's the thing that I learned the most. And I can be a perfectionism with the best of them. You can't see it on this screen, but I literally have a sash behind me that says Miss Overthinker that a business coach friend of mine gave me. Because I can overanalyze till the cows come home. But a thing I learned in graduate school was about the Pareto principle, which is commonly called the 80-20 rule. So I like to try to help people get started. And sometimes it's all they need with the 20% that gives the 80% of the value.
Right, right.
And that's usually simplicity is sometimes involved in that. I think a lot of times the simple things are hard. Simple does not mean easy.
Right, right. It just means clear, really.
Right. And I think clear is sometimes the hardest thing to come up with. I mean, you're a marketer, so you do digital stuff. Do you work with people on marketing strategy and like branding and that kind of stuff along with website or whatever? So for me, if I think about my small business, my 20% that gets 80% of the value is having a good website with good information, freaking buttons that are obvious to click, calls to action, kind of stuff. Yeah. But my SEO is not great. Okay. But that wasn't in my first 20%. That is in the let's get it up.
And then SEO, don't get me started.
I mean, you can go with with SEO. Yeah. Half the battle with SEO, though, if you think about 80-20ing the SEO, for me, it would be to have my people check all the pages and make sure that Kansas City career coach and tech career coach terms appear.
Right.
Which I know that they don't appear on every page right now because I have Googled myself. But if I want to go take the next step in SEO, I'm going to go check stuff like that. I'm not going to be like, oh, I need to buy this expensive tool or spend $3,000 a month for someone to do all this stuff.
Yeah, you can do make sure basic SEO stuff yourself for sure. I mean, SEO is really undergoing a huge change right now with Google, you know, utilizing AI. They're aiming for a no-click system. Right, which wouldn't work in your case because you're a consultant. But, you know, you've seen it now. If you search on Google for something, it gives you a AI compilation of what it thinks you want to hear. It doesn't, you know, like, so if you were on the first page before, you're at the bottom of the first page or on the second or more page.
The real trick, I have a lot of people that are poking around in this because they're AI nerds because I'm around a lot of nerds.
Topic of the era, yeah.
But, right now, the holy grail is to get ChatGPT to recommend you.
Right. Yeah.
And at the moment, the rules that were good for Google SEO are roughly what gets you in ChatGPT recommendations.
And FAQ pages are huge.
Say more about that.
Huge. Because when
you mean FAQ on your own website, or what do you mean?
FAQ pages on your own website, because that way, when it crawls, it can see the exact answer and question and answer. So if somebody asks that question, there's an immediate answer, right? Of course, if they're aligned with the other things on your website as well, like, you know, it wants to be local, but whatever, cool. Right? So FAQ is a much overlooked way to at least start to get into that, the recommendations of, you know, AI.
Hot dog. I learned something new today.
Hot dog.
That's fantastic.
So how can people work with you, Diana?
How can they work with me?
Yes.
I work with people right now, mostly one-on-one. I do occasionally do like group workshops and things like that. So if you want to work closely with me on whatever that career goal is, the best thing to do is go to dianaalt.com. There's two big green buttons on my homepage. One of them says book a call, and that you can book an intro call to talk about which of my coaching programs might be appropriate for you. There's also another big green button on the other side of the page that says, let's connect. And I have a weekly-ish newsletter that I send out that is very friendly. It's not like the ridiculous newsletters you get from the big companies that land in your work inbox and you just immediately delete. It's like me trying to talk to you like a real person that's a peer of mine. And so you can get...
That's a very good selling point because so many things, you sign up for a mailing list and it's just AI, you know?
Well, it's AI dribble and it's 2,500 words long and...
Yeah.
Today I wrote my email address. I wrote my email newsletter for tomorrow, which happens to be Halloween, said it's not so spooky season. And I basically gave four curated resources for people if they're scared about like layoff news and things like economic news that's in, you know, bombarding all of us right now. There was a link for free resources for a blog, Forbes blog for job seekers, a link to a technology skills free site by IBM. Like it's a legit, pretty built out site.
Yeah, that's pretty legit.
Verizon Small Business Digital Program, that's also free. And then a nonprofit management. If people want to go have I just found these reputable programs and said, here, go do one of these. You don't even have to pay.
Sign up for Diana's mailing list.
Yeah, it's a good one. I'm a little bit rated PG. I'm a salty bitch.
That's, you know.
those are the best ways. And then my socials are on there too. So you can get to my LinkedIn and things like that.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah.
Anything you feel like we didn't cover that we missed that you.
So I'm going to tell you a little thing. So about, I don't know, 2 years ago or so, I was in Texas. My aunt turned 85 and I happened to be down there. And so I went to her birthday party. And my cousin and his new wife came up to me and were asking me a lot of questions about my work because they see me talk about it on Facebook or whatever. And my cousin's wife asked, what is the hardest part of your job as a coach? And I said, the hardest part is getting people to admit that they want what they want. That is the hardest thing. That's because crazy. So many people believe that it doesn't matter. What you want actually matters. Oh,
that's beautiful. It really is. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks so much for joining us. I've really loved talking with you.
Well, I love talking with you too.
Okay. Cool. Go check out Diana. She's amazing.
Please do. Tell your friends.
Hey, thanks. See you next time. Thanks for watching today. I'm glad you watched the whole thing. If you could do us a favor, it would help so much if you hit subscribe. It helps give us just a little boost to keep this podcast going. Thank you.